Granny, little did she know that Granny could take care of any problem that came up. And they were going down the aisle in the airplane, and Granny, Barzilla was ahead of Granny, and Granny goes rushing up the aisle, and she shoves Barzilla out of the way. And Barzilla almost falls. And Granny lunges into the seat next to the window. And so Lou goes up and she says, "What's the matter, Miss Daly? Are you all right?" And Granny says, "Well, hell yeah, I had to get to the window seat before Brazil got here. I ain't never been on an airplane before." But growing up in Sodom, there was a lot of characters. And one of them was little Betty. And little Betty was about, she wasn't even 5 feet tall. She was about 4 feet and 10 inches tall. And she weighed about 78 pounds, sopping wet. And she was married to Amos. And Amos weighed about 300 pounds. And it got up, Amos had been sick pretty much all year, and it got up in the spring of the year, and Amos got to be older than God's dog, and he died. Well, now the custom back then was you would send the clothes with the corpse to the funeral home, and the funeral director would fix them up and whatever you sent with them, and bring them back home and set them up in the living room. And you'd have the wake at home. And folks would come and set up with the body. And so that's what little Betty done. She sent Amos's blue suit with him, and the funeral director fixed him up and fetched him back and set him up there in the living room. And little Betty was waiting for folks to show up for the wake, and the first person that showed up that afternoon was her sister, Vine. And they're standing there looking over in the coffin. And Vine said, "Well, you know, little Betty, his hair don't look right. It don't look natural." So they sort of, you know, worked on it a little bit and smoothed it down. And then little Betty said, "Well, you know, Vine, I believe he'd look better in his other suit." And Vine said, "Little Betty, I believe you're right." So what they first tried was little Betty crawled up in the coffin with Amos and set into unbuttoning and, you know, trying to get his clothes off. And Amos is a pretty big feller, and he fit pretty snug in that coffin. So his clothes wouldn't come off. So little Betty crawled back over and stood standing there by the coffin, and Vine said, "Little Betty, all I know to do is for us just to get him out." So they pulled and tugged and managed to haul Amos over the side, and they wouldn't know where to go but there on the floor beside the coffin. And so they laid him out, and there he was. And little Betty commenced to change in his clothes. And she got down to his underdrawers, and they weren't none. And she was mighty upset, but she fixed that, and then she dressed him in his other suit. And then it come time to lift Amos back over in his coffin. And by that time, he had settled sort of to the floor. And they couldn't pick him up. Well, now, it was getting on up in the afternoon, and little Betty said, "Well, Lord, have mercy, Vine, what are we going to do? Folks is going to start showing up for the wake." And Vine said, "Little Betty, it's unnatural for him to be laying there on the floor." And she said, "The only thing that we can do is for you to run up to Irvin's. Now, Irvin's my father. And get him to come down here and help us get Amos back over in his coffin where he rightfully belongs." Well, now, little Betty had asthma. And by the time she got up the hill to the house, she was winded and was struggling for her breath. Now, Daddy was a big New York Yankees baseball fan, and he was watching a ball game. Now, if you love a baseball team, and Daddy loved the Yankees, then you get in there, you know, you're in on every play. And I was sitting on the couch watching Daddy, because it was a lot more entertaining to watch Daddy than it was to watch the ball game. And all of a sudden the door flung open and hit the wall. And there stood little Betty, hanging on the doorknob, breathing hard. And she said, "Irvin, you've got to come down to the house. and help me get Amos back in his coffin. So Daddy goes from the New York Yankees game to little Betty clutching the doorknob. And he says, "Well, where in the world is he? I thought he was dead." And little Betty says, "Well, Irvin, you fool, he is dead. Me and Vine got him out of the coffin to change his clothes, and we can't pick him up to put him back in his coffin." And Daddy said, "Little Betty, damned if you didn't worry him to death the whole time he's living, and you're still after him." But Daddy was a good person, and he knew that little Betty was in a dilemma, so he got up, and I got up. I wasn't about to miss this. And down the hill we went to little Betty's house, and sure enough, there was Amos and Vine to keep him watch to make sure nothing else ungodly happened. And so Daddy and little Betty and Vine tried to lift Amos off the floor and put him back in his coffin, and they couldn't budge him. So Daddy had to go down to the store. Now, the store was a little place, just a little general store, you know, and you could go down there and sit around and solve all the world's problems. And he went down there and got three fellers, and they came back up to little Betty's house and managed to lift Amos up and put him back over in his coffin where he rightfully belonged. And then, as is the custom down in the mountains, the men folks stepped back away from the coffin, and they left me and Vine and little Betty standing there next to the coffin. I was just barely big enough to see over the side. Little Betty said, "Well, Vine, now that I see him laying there like that, I believe he did look better than his other self." Up here whether I'll do Inez Chandler and the Snake Handlers. What do you think? There wasn't too much that went on in Sodom. Now, and as Jimmy says, now I swear these is the truth. They are. There wasn't much that went on in Sodom exciting during the summertime. But this one particular summer when I graduated from high school, the word went through Sodom like a bolt of lightning that the Snake Handlers was coming over from Tennessee to conduct a service up at the Low Gap Church. Now, Inez Chandler was a real character, and I knew that if Inez went to the services that they would be things to talk about for years. Now, folks, that was in 1970. This is 1990, and I'm still talking about it. Because I sat on Inez's porch for about a week, and I begged and pleaded, but finally, she agreed to go to this service. Now, Inez didn't like to go to church. She was not a church-going person. But she went to this, and I took it. Well, we got to the church, and we went right down the aisle to the front row. And I said, "Inez," now Inez is a big gal. She weighed 320 pounds. And I said, "We might not ought to go to the front. We might ought to just sit back here in the back. And if we need to get out quick, we can get out." And Inez said, "No, I've come for the show. And I'm going to the front." And we did. And we sat down right on the front row. Well, now, Inez was a powerful ballad singer. She had a real powerful voice. She didn't need a microphone. She could rattle the leaves on the tops of the mountains whenever she sat out on her porch and sang. And she talked, you know, somehow the words skipped her brain and they just sort of come out. And she said whatever she thought. And there we sat on the front of this church. Well, now, it's a little country church, and they didn't have no screens over the windows, and they didn't have no electricity. And they had these little oil lamps, you know, that would set on these little metal holders that had come out that had been nailed into the wall. Well, now, it was in the summertime, and they didn't need the lamps on, but they had all the windows up. And so the moths, you know, and the millers and everything is rattling around on the inside of the church. And you know how folks would fan, you know, sort of like you would in here, Lord, if you could. And you heard all this rattling in the paper behind you, and folks is using, you know, their hymn books and everything. And so Inez crossed her arms, you know, like this, and I thought, oh, Lord, I'm in trouble. And she planted her feet. Have you ever seen anybody plant their feet? And crossed her arms. And she set into looking around, and she was lifting one foot up and then the other, like this. And she said, I don't see nobody no different. They ain't nobody here looks no different. When Inez's voice, like I said, carried. And then she said, I'm going to the house. They ain't nobody here looks no different. Well, about that time, the side door opened. Now, by this time, the whole church had filled up behind us. You know, that not even standing room. It had spilled plumb out into the parking lot, you know, little dirt parking lot out in front of the church. And the side door opened, and these folks come in that nobody know. So Inez says, I bet that's them. They's Furners. They look like Furners. They's bound to be from Tennessee. And they had these two boxes, wooden boxes with them. And they set them down over in the corner. And then one feller separated from the rest of them, and he walked out into the front there of the church. And he said, let us pray. And then he flew in to pray, and then he prayed, and he prayed, and he prayed. And all the time I could hear Inez huffing, sitting there beside me. And then, for some reason, this fella started, you know, talking like I've never heard anybody talk before. And Inez announced in a very loud voice that they'd for sure get the snakes out now. He had done set into talking in tongues. Well, this fella runs over to the side then, and he flips the lid back on one of them wooden boxes, and he reaches down in there with both hands, and he comes out with two of the biggest rattlesnakes I've ever seen in my life, and both of them just singing. And Inez stands straight up in the front of the church. And she says, hell, them's real snakes! And I don't know what she thought. And when Inez did that, the entire congregation, for lack of a better word, exploded behind me. They all came to their feet, and they started going out to windows. And they immediately blocked the door. And by that time, there's six of these folks. And every one of them had a double fist full of some sort of a poisonous snake, copperhead, rattlesnake. And Inez said, I'm going out of here. And I knew we was in trouble, because Inez couldn't fit through the windows, and the door was blocked. And I said, Inez, by this time I was standing on the front pew. And I said, just get up here and stand. They ain't nowhere to go, honey. And she said, child, you grab a hold of the back of my dress. And I'll show you how to go out of this place. And we was one of the first ones in the parking lot. And I noticed, as we was going to the car, that she is picking her feet up awful high. And I said, Inez, what are you doing? And she said, you can't never tell about them folks. They might have turned them loose out here. So we got in the car, and we went down the road. We got to Inez's house. Now, Inez, when she got out of the car, it took her a while. She had hooked one hand on the side over here, and she'd hook one hand on this side, and then she'd do this. And sort of, you know, worm her way out. Well, she got about half worm, and she looked around at me, and she said, now, let me tell you something, child. I think the world of you, and I love you like you was one of my own. But don't you ever even entertain the thought of coming back down here and taking me to church. I reckon that's about it. However, me and Bobby were talking on the way over here. We're thinking about doing another, we did a ballot swap kind of workshop type thing this afternoon at 3 o'clock, and we're thinking about doing another one tomorrow. Or what is tomorrow?
I don't know.
Tuesday.
Lord, I feel like I've been here 2 weeks.
I thought you had something new tomorrow at 3.
Have I got something? Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm doing a beginning banjo thing tomorrow at 3.
Be Wednesday or Thursday.
Wednesday or Thursday. Check with us.
In here, I think, now.
Right quick.
Quick or long, never how long it takes.
Lord, that reminds me of a story, but I'll not tell it. Tommy Gerald was a fiddle player from over in Mount Airy. He's one of the best fiddle players that's ever lived or that will ever live. I don't imagine as how they could be much better. And he taught me this song. It's June Apple. But he used to tell a story about this fella that on Saturday evenings, that's the only time he ever drunk. And he'd get, now Tommy said if you bought good moonshine, you could shake it up. And if you could count fast enough, you could tell what proof moonshine was by counting the bubbles on the top of it. But you had to be a quick counter. Now, he said this fella would buy moonshine, sometimes 110 proof. Now, folks, that'll knock your socks off. And he'd get drunk on Saturday evening, and he'd sit on the porch. And when he got drunk, now for some reason, whenever he got drunk and happy, he associated that with shooting. Well, now his wife had to milk a cow every evening down at the milk gap. And whenever, she'd do just fine till Saturday evening. And then every Saturday evening, whenever she heard the voice off of the porch that said, "Lou Eller, you'd better duck. I'm a-fixin' to shoot in that direction." She knew it was time to lay down next to the cow, 'cause she knew he wouldn't kill the cow.